What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Fit for Life Within Julie podcast. Today's podcast is a little bit different, and I'm so excited because I have my big brother Hugh staying with us for the week.
Hey, team. Nice to meet you all. I'm actually kind of nervous about this one because it's the first time we'll be talking about our actual lives versus what we do on a day-to-day basis. So this is going to be fun.
Yeah, so in today's podcast, we're going to cover a whole lot of things. But before we get into all the questions you sent through Instagram, we're going to start with like a quick five. So I'm just going to fire some things off at Hugh so you kind of get to know a little bit more about, I guess, his background before we deep dive into some of the questions that came through. So first, your age.
Cool. So I'm 33 now.
Easy question to start with.
I know. Thank you.
What's your current job?
So currently I'm the operations and marketing manager for a large conservation and hunting group, the New Zealand Deer Stalkers.
Awesome. And something that came through a lot, are you single or are you taken?
I am currently single.
Okay. And lastly, oh no, that's only four, I think. But anyway, where are you based?
I'm based in Wellington, although that might change in the new year. I've been looking to get more out into the countryside, and Christchurch is looking pretty good.
I feel like Hugh is very much in his, I want to settle down, get a dog, have a house, live rural, kind of.
Yeah, the country music vibe is starting to really kick in now. And so that settling down thing is getting more important.
I think he spent too much time with Ross and I, but
definitely. You were the ones who started me on country music because it was playing constantly. And then I went home and was like, this is actually pretty good. Then I talked to my friends like, yeah, why aren't you on this already? I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
country music is now my number one sort of most played genre.
Yay! And lastly, what is kind of your thing you like to do in your spare time? Limited spare time that you have.
In the limited spare time I have far too many hobbies, whether it's photography, but at the moment it's jiu-jitsu. I'm competing in a tournament in Christchurch next month, and I just love it because it's good for mental health, fitness, and really great with my friends.
Awesome. So that actually leads on perfectly to one of the first questions. We're going to start off a little bit easy. So there was a jiu-jitsu question that came in, and it was how to deal with anxiety, nervousness, and fear of getting injured.
I think the key thing to accept is in life, there are always going to be opportunities for you to get injured, whether you're just at the gym or walking down the street and getting hit by a bus. Like, whatever you do, there is always a risk associated. When it comes to jiu-jitsu, which is a combat sport at the moment, and it is very physical with different body types, I constantly fight with guys who are sort of 30, 40 kilos heavier than me, but I also train with women who are sort of 20 kilos lighter than me as well. The thing to remember is that as long as you're being conscious of what you're doing, talking to your training partners, and just being in a gym that has a really positive and supportive environment, that's how you minimize injuries. Also, recognizing when you're tired and maybe making silly mistakes, that's when injuries can start to occur. So the key thing is pick good people and understand that there are risks in everything. If you think about them too much, you'd never do anything. So just go for it.
I love that. And I can second that there are risks with anything. Seeing as I broke my toe in the gym walking. I walked into a weight plate.
Yep. I badly sprained my neck at the gym, not lifting weights, but I went to tie up my shoelace and sneezed. And the sneeze was what did it. And everyone's like, how did you hurt your neck so badly? I'm like, I was at the gym. Don't ask any questions.
Yeah. I mean, so if you don't take any risks, you're never going to do anything, I think. Awesome. So I have a whole lot of questions. Some of these are deep. Some of them are on the shallower side. Let's stick to jiu-jitsu right now as we're on the topic. One was, what impact has BJJ, so Brazilian jiu-jitsu, had on your life? And why are you keen on more people doing it?
Yeah, so I came into jiu-jitsu about a year and a bit ago. At the time, I was dating someone who I was pretty confident was sort of the one. Turns out I was wrong about that. But I started because I wanted to get close to them and understand a thing that they really were passionate about. After the breakup, I looked to move gyms, but having spoken to my coach, he's just a really good guy. His name's Vanderson. He's in Combat Room out of Wellington. Anyone is always welcome to drop through and meet us and hang out. But his life coaching and approach to life really helped level me out, keep things balanced, and get some sort of purpose back into my life, get my career back under control. Like, my career has always been going really well. But when my emotions were sort of up and about, he was able to sort of stabilize that. And now I'm surrounded by really great people and having, like, I absolutely love my life. So the reason I'm keen on more people getting into jiu-jitsu is not just for the physical side of things, but the mental health of actually going and getting to know a community that care about your well-being. So, yeah, you get on the mat and you try and sort of strangle each other and make each other into really sort of uncomfortable positions. But when it's over, you then talk about, okay, how did you feel? How are you going? How's your health? Like, the guys and the girls will always check up and say, oh, are you getting enough sleep? Like, are you too stressed from work? We haven't seen you this week. What's going on? You seem a little bit down. I had a friend of mine who came to train, and while he was on the mats, he got a text message that his best friend had passed away. And he was just sitting there, and I was like, yo, what's going on? Because his energy had shifted, and I sensed it. He's like, he told me what is going on. I'm like, what do you need right now? And he's like, I just want to roll just to not think about it. And so we just got on, and we just sort of started trying to strangle each other. And then just sat there, and he started telling me about sort of the best memories he had with this guy. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go call his parents, and we're going to go through that process. But the best thing is the community involved, the physicality of it, and it's just a good space to explore yourself and understand how you deal with actual pressure of someone making you very uncomfortable, and realizing that if you can deal with a 120-kilo person trying to strangle you, the email at work seems like not a big deal anymore.
Yeah, awesome. Something in there I think you've talked about a bit with BJJ is community. So the community of the gym. And I think that's really important for anyone that wants to get active. Like, the community around you really matters. Like, if you want to live a healthy lifestyle, which obviously this podcast is about, and you want to, you know, make better choices, whether it's nutrition or training and things like that, the environment you surround yourself with really matters, because that's going to keep you going on your fitness journey.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also having a good group of friends. When I started, it was sort of just me and my friend Max. Now my entire group all trains. So there's not only just that little bit of competitive attitude, but co-learning with each other. But there's an accountability. If I don't see them at training, I send them a message on Instagram and be like, hey, haven't seen you this week. Why do you suck at jiu-jitsu? It's because you're not training. So there's a friendly level of competition, and the people who surround you, making sure they're on the same vibe as you and they have the same life goals. That way you're rolling around with a pack of people who are looking to develop as well. So yeah, that community makes or breaks people.
Awesome. And that is exactly why I created the Unduly Fit Squad, because I wanted that community that I didn't have when I started. And that's what I would expect of all the women that tune into this. Like, I want you, if you're on the squad, to be supporting one another, to be checking in with one another, especially with Elevate, the 8-week challenge being halfway through. Like, I expect you to be, you know, reaching out and checking in on one another. So it's cool to hear that, you know, that you've got that environment with BJJ too. So another question following on to that kind of community aspect, what difference do you think it's made, you know, surrounding yourself as you grow up with the right people and a good core group of friends? Because I feel like you do have a really good group of friends around you.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate. So I used to be a type of person who had a wide group of like friends who were, they were good friends and all good people, but I was spreading myself too thin. So I was trying to be everything for everyone. And over the years, that number of people has slowly, because people have moved away or we've made different life choices and grown apart, I've now got a core group of about 7 or 8 friends that are like, we joke and just like call them my pallbearer friends. Like, if you were at a funeral, they'd be the ones who would carry your coffin. Like, they are there for you any time of the day or night. If you say, pick up the phone and they need you, you'll be there for them and they'll come to you. So I think that's, having that core group is really good. And the way I sort of choose them is I look for their character traits in times where they're struggling. Everyone is not going to be perfect all the time, but I look for the ones who are willing to learn from their mistakes and actually take accountability and responsibility for their mistakes, and are dedicated to, some of them have a really strong faith and religious, and that kind of helps. I'm not personally religious. I've had my own struggles with that. But yeah, it's the people who genuinely care about other people, but are also not afraid to draw boundaries. So they're not people pleasers. They're givers, but with their own boundaries in place.
Oh, I love that. Because often people ask, you know, going into 30s or like 20s, like, people struggle to meet friends these days because everyone's online, but they're like, how do I meet friends and how do I choose to, you know, set those boundaries with people? Like, I notice with people on the squad as well, they'll be on their fitness journey, but they're surrounded by friends. They're like, have a drink. You know, why are you going to the gym tomorrow? Why are you on a diet? And they have all these things around them. So when it comes to meeting friends, like, what's your go-to for meeting new friends these days?
Honestly, I'm kind of a bad example. So my friends come through jiu-jitsu because they're in a similar sport to me. I've also had friends suggest joining, I guess, your fit squad is an example of that. But for meeting local people, running teams apparently are really good, like joining your local run club, because then you're all on a sort of similar journey of health and fitness. And if my friend's like, hey, we're going out for dinner, I'm like, cool, it's a BYO. I'm like, I'm not going to be drinking tonight because I've got to wake up and train. I've got a tournament. They're like, yeah, cool. We're just happy to see you there and happy contributing. We have things where at a dinner, no one will have their cell phone out. We'll put them face down in the middle of the table, put them on loud. And if anyone answers their phone, then they have to shout a round of drinks or a snack or something for the table. So you have to be really present with those close group of friends.
Yeah.
So when it comes to meeting people, find a hobby you love, find people who enjoy it, and then make an effort to get to know them outside of whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's where most of my newer friends have come from. But my old friends are, I mean, they're university friends.
Yeah, yeah. I think as you grow older, you definitely, as you mentioned, you grow apart from certain friends and you just make different life choices, and it doesn't really make sense to keep those people in your life. And I'm someone that, I guess, not cutthroat, but I just understand that we all have different goals, and I'm fine in like letting a friendship end if it doesn't align with where I want to go moving forward. Like if you're surrounded by people that are always tearing you down, I just don't think you need to be surrounded by those people, and there's no issue in you just going ghost and never spending time with them again.
One of the things I wish I'd learned earlier is if a friendship or someone in your life costs you your peace and the price of that friendship is your peace, that friendship is too important, and walk away from it. So like last night, I had a friend who was causing me a bit of a nightmare. And I said, look, I understand where you're coming from, but this has been taking up too much of my mental headspace. I've got a lot going on right now. I think we just call it, like, put a pin in it. Thank you for the good times you've had. But you're happier, I'm happier. Let's just continue in our separate directions. And that's a fine boundary to draw when you get grown up.
Yeah, and I also think, like, if you've got friends and you're hanging out with them, like, how I know if something is good, it's about that. Like, if we finish hanging out and then after that I feel absolutely drained, I know that that's not the friendship I want to have. Yeah. Like, I don't want to hang out with people that are gossiping, that are talking about, you know, high school and all the things like years and years ago. Like, I don't care about that. But if I leave a friendship and I feel so motivated, so inspired, like I'm ready to go get it, whatever my goal is, then I know that I want to see that person again. I really listen to that. Whereas before, when I was younger, I might have been a little bit more lenient with it and just kept seeing them for no reason.
I like what you said there, because that's 100% the way I approach it as well. If people in my life are busy talking about other people predominantly, I don't care. I don't like gossip. I don't like drama. I have no time for it. So I'm like, I'd rather talk to people about what books they're reading, what's been inspiring them. I'm that friend who's like, so how's your relationship with your father going? I know you've been struggling with this, and just having those deep and meaningful conversations that grow you as a human.
Yeah.
They're sustainable. The rest of like, oh, this so-and-so was talking or kissed this person, or was a party where you got drunk. I'm like, miss me with that. I don't care.
Like, are you 12?
Yeah, it's like, I don't have energy for that anymore.
Yeah, oh, that's funny. We're similar on that, definitely. So something you mentioned going back to BJJ, but more so relationships. You said a relationship kind of failed. You stuck with BJJ. It helped you, you know, focus on things. Let's talk about breakups, because you've obviously mentioned it, but someone messaged through saying that they've just had a breakup with someone of 9 years. And to put things into perspective, that's how long Ross and I have been together. So obviously that's like a third of my life pretty much. And I can't imagine going through that, but I know you've gone through a few breakups. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, how you got through breakups, how they could potentially move past this.
Yeah. So I've been unfortunate to have a couple of really properly bad ones. 9 years is a long time, and so one thing that I went and learnt in therapy dealing with the recovery process is actually to have a look and take the time to take stock of what's going on in your life. So one thing that can be helpful is if you imagine a pie chart, as you said, like you and Ross, that's like a third of your life. When you lose that person, it's like a massive dent in your wheel that you feel that loss. An exercise we went through is, I said to my therapist, I'm like, yeah, I've got my partner, I've got my work, and I've got my friends. And that was like a third, and that was how I saw my life balanced. And she's like, okay, I understand that's what you've got going on. And then a little later in the session, when we were talking about life and a little bit less of the relationship stuff, she came back and said, look, this is how I see your life. And she drew that same pie chart next to the original one that had my relationship as being a third. And she said, look, you've got your education, you've got your sport, you've got your volunteering work, you've got your friends, you've got your family, and went through all of the different things in my life that were going amazingly, that I was really enjoying. and then had my relationship that I'd lost as one segment of it. So when you put into perspective, yes, okay, the relationship really sucks when it goes and like it breaks you, like, and it should. If you really love someone, that end of the relationship is a death of sorts, and they talk about it in a lot of sort of spiritual guides and things of it being a death that you need to mourn the death of that relationship. Don't move on to the next person so quickly, because that'll mess you up and that'll mess the next person up. It's just an avoidance tactic. So don't do that, but put it into perspective of everything else that's going on in your life, and then realize actually things are going pretty good. And if you look at the rest of your life and think, you know what, this isn't what I want right now and it's not going great, then start working on those other sections, your friendships, your family relationships, your sport, your health, your fitness, all of those things. Get those right, because if those aren't functioning anyway, then the next relationship you jump into, if that's all broken, is probably not going to be a happy ever after for you. Like, you need to do, you don't have to be perfect when you start a new relationship, but you should have done the work to get yourself as far forward as you can in that process.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sorry to hear that they went through that. Absolutely sucks. But also know that you're not alone. Like, every generation of human beings in history has gone through that pain. Reading poetry and reading sort of classic literature, Jane Austen and all the rest of them, yeah, they went through it as well. Like, you're not alone and you will survive it.
Yeah, awesome. And you have definitely survived some tricky situations over the past few years. I've seen Hugh go through breakups, and you're still here now. So, I mean, yeah,
and
go you.
I'm still here and I'm still happy.
Yeah.
Actually happier than ever, which I'm genuinely excited to be able to say.
Yeah, that's good. And I think, like, if you go into a relationship unhappy with yourself, it's just not going to lead to a happy relationship. Like, I met Ross when I least expected it. I was so happy doing my own thing, and he complimented my life. I complimented his life, and that's why we've built things together. But I think, like, if I had not been happy with where I was in life, it wouldn't have been the right time. And even if I met him, we just wouldn't have worked out.
And there's an important thing there is also make sure you check in on a future partner or a potential partner, where they're at, and making sure they're comfortable with their life. I know when I was younger, and I still have that tendency now, I look at people who are going through things and I think, oh, maybe I can help them. Maybe I can save them.
Oh, no.
You can't. I can't. I think it was J. Cole or someone who's like, don't save her. She doesn't want to be saved. I'm like,
yeah.
Don't do it. It'll, especially if you're a giver and like have a really generous heart, finding someone who's broken and willing to use that, they will use you to fix themselves, and then they will abandon you when they feel that they have now surpassed you. Find someone that's happy with themselves and chooses you, and that you choose. Way better solution.
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to looking into a relationship and who a potential partner is, like, what qualities are you looking in for your future wifey? Because I need a sister-in-law one day.
Yeah, I know. You're in that find me a sister-in-law phase.
Yeah.
I think one thing that... So I've been given a whole bunch of advice from different guys, because when I realized that my taste was clearly off and not working, I was like, right, I'm going to crowdsource this information to people who have
this too.
Yeah, like people who have happy relationships. My mentors, some of them in their 50s who've been married for decades, and then some who are relatively new but in good and early relationships. What I've realized is checking what someone's integrity is like, and that's a really obscure thing. So I look for indicators of integrity. How do they treat people around them that have nothing, that can do nothing for them? So waiters,
yes.
People at supermarkets, making sure that they just treat them with dignity and respect. Looking at their relationship with their father, that's a really important one that I've realized as a man, is quite a, talking to all of the guys in my life, they've said the worst relationships they've had are ones where the relationship is either strained or the father isn't around. And I think that's because dads have a really stabilizing and practical thing. And this is nothing against those who've had single parent households for different reasons. Like, everyone has a different thing. That father figure could be replaced by a strong, like a male coach, a teacher, a mentor. But having a really good relationship with a father or a strong masculine figure, really helpful and healthy, is a good indicator for me, and for guys looking for that. Other things I look for are good friend groups. People become the most like their top five people in their life. So if their friends are sort of going out drinking, partying every weekend, intentionally to get drunk, like, getting drunk and things is okay. Like, every now and then, if you have a birthday or a big celebration or a wedding, absolutely go nuts, have fun. But for me, if they're doing that as an instead of a hobby or getting drunk as their hobby, that to me is an indicator that maybe our values don't align and maybe our lifestyle choices. Like if I'm waking up on a Sunday to go to a meditation retreat, or I'm waking up on a Sunday to go strangle my friends in a padded white room, that sounds weirder than it now that I've said that out loud. But if I'm doing a sport, and they might just not understand that, or they might have bad habits, like, hey, I know you want to go and do your sport this morning, but how about you just stay in bed a little bit longer? I'm like, yep, I can understand what you want, but also I'd rather have a partner that's like, hey, I know you're tired, but you said you were going to do this competition. Are you feeling ready for it? No, you probably should get your ass to training.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I think having a partner that can hold you accountable to the things that you want to do is important, as well as supporting you as opposed to like pulling you back. So saying like, stay in bed. Oh, why don't you come out if you don't want to go out, or you've got a competition the next day? Like, you're just not going to last.
And that's something actually I've observed with you and Ross, actually. Like, Ross is the most down-to-earth, humble and sort of quiet-mannered dude. But in the way he does it, he's like he's a rock for you. And he's very much, if something's not going on or your vibe is off, I've seen him be like, hey, this is your job. This is what you have to do. Go train. Like that positive encouragement of, oh, I understand what you want, but this is good for you long term. I'm not your enemy. Oh, the other one is understanding how to argue and how to communicate. Great communication skills.
And that takes work.
Takes a lot of work. And understanding that people are raised in different backgrounds. Like, we had interesting parents and we learnt.
We'll definitely talk about that soon.
Yeah, like, our communication style has definitely developed, and I've had to learn as a guy how to communicate, because men are very quick to be like, oh, you've got a problem? I'll fix that for you. Here's the solution. Whereas women are like, sometimes you just want to vent and be heard.
Yeah. So good boy! Look at my old brother knowing.
So one of my first questions is, when someone comes to me a problem, I'll say, do you want empathy right now or do you want solutions? So I can change the gear which I use to listen.
Like, do you want to vent? Guys, look, my brother is looking for a wife, and that is just music to my ears. Not every woman wants to hear a solution and hear practical ideas. Sometimes we just want you to be like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Would you like a massage? Would you like a cup of tea?
Oh my God, that sucks. Oh,
tell me more.
Let me cook dinner real quick. It's fine.
Yeah, we don't always want a practical solution, and often sometimes men can be really practical and that can be great. But yes, well done, yeah. Hugh. I'm proud of you.
For any guys that tune into this, ask, do you want empathy or do you want a solution? That's going to help so much. It's been a game changer for my friendships as well.
Yeah, and I think on the flip side of that, because more women listen to this podcast, you could even just say that to whoever, your friend, your partner, your parent, you know, I just want empathy right now. I don't need a solution. Like, tell them what you want, because they're not mind readers.
Guys, everyone's complaints like, guys are bad at understanding, we're bad at communicating. I'm like, tell them what you need. They're practical. They'll give it to you. Like, if you're like, I need advice, I'm like, oh, cool, God, it's like, I just need you to listen and tell me that this sucks. I'm like, cool, we can do that. Just let us know what you need and we'll happily provide.
Yeah.
Don't make us guess, because we've got a lot going on.
And then going back to what you said about Ross, one time I just remember we were having like a nighttime chat, lying in bed, and I think maybe I was on a comp prep and I was tired, I was hungry, and I was just feeling not very motivated about everything. And Ross pretty much just called me out and he said, like, look, you wanted to do the competition. This is what you need to do. So do it. And that's what I needed at that point in time. It was calm. He wasn't my enemy. He knew what I wanted long term. It was just a moment of me feeling, you know, hungry at night, lying in bed. And the next day I woke up fine and I went and smashed the gym and I finished the prep and, you know, I placed. So sometimes you do need someone that's going to hold you accountable. Other times you need someone that's just going to hear you out and be supportive.
Yeah, I like it to think of it as like, sometimes you need a teammate that's a lot like side by side with you fighting the battles. Other times you need a coach, and it's like you can pick and switch between the roles, but the guys sometimes need that as well, where it's like, actually you need your girlfriend or partner to be like, you said you were going to do this thing, you haven't done it, what's up, why not, what are you gonna, but don't nag them about it. Yeah. Like, remind them and then carry on.
I heard the other day someone was saying that, like, a parenting, probably I heard it on a TikTok, to be honest, a parenting relationship will not work. Like, Ross and I do not parent each other. We don't even like being told what to do, to be honest. So that will lead us on to parenting and how Hugh and I grew up. So Hugh is my older brother by about 3 years, I think, yeah, three and a half years. because I am 20 plus 10 just next month, birthday month. But anyway, how we grew up, we don't talk about it much. And I think that it's not fair for me to share a lot about my childhood or my parents because they didn't sign up to social media. I did. So Q and I don't share a lot about our childhood because I don't think that's fair on them. And I think I would like to talk to them before sharing more about them. I think that's more of a fair way. But I think that we can still talk about certain things of it.
Like general experiences and how we experienced growing up and how we've seen each other change, I think we can cover.
Yeah, I think so too. So do you want to tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up or what you went on to study and how you got to where you are now, really?
Interesting. So the broad background, which probably everyone knows, is that we have one Asian parent and one European parent. So being the eldest child, there was a lot of expectation felt on me to be the oldest son who was always having to be the smartest one and what I realized, one thing that's interesting is I was always praised for being a natural at things or being good at things in general. Like it was always like, oh, Hugh, you're such a natural at violin, or you're so naturally smart. And like, I know I started reading, I was reading books when I was sort of 3.5-ish, versus I noticed that our parents praised you a lot for how hard you worked. And that, when you break that down, actually, in parenting theory, which I've been reading a lot more about, is when you praise someone for their hard work, they typically will go a lot further because it's the effort they put in that's being praised, which is a good thing to praise kids on. What I learned is that when they praise natural talent, it can lead you to be a little bit lazier because everything comes easily. And that was a thing I had to deprogram from myself. But it also then discounted or felt like the hard work I put in was being discounted because I'm like, look, I put in 6 hours of violin practice and you say it's because I'm so natural at this. I'm like, it was 6 hours of just hating my life in a room practicing alone, but that was all discounted by natural. So that was an interesting thing that carried on through university as well. So I did the high school thing in Blenheim, then went on to university where I studied a Bachelor of Music in Violin and History. Then I did Bachelor of Commerce in International Business, Strategy, Entrepreneurship, Consumer Behavior, and Marketing. And then I did my Master's degree in Consumer Behavior and Strategic Management. So I took a very, I guess, traditional academic one. I was the first one in our family to go to university, which was unexpected.
In our immediate family.
So I remember my dad saying, like, I grew up learning how to hunt, how to shoot, and sort of bushcraft survival things because that's what the boys and like men did. Dad is ex-military, and so as a result of that, there was just a lot of pressure to be that sort of. They never expected me to go to university.
Yeah, Dad did engineering.
Was an engineer.
Very practical.
Practical man, and they sort of had this expectation, I think, that I would follow in that family. So what I realize is I'm the first male in our direct family who didn't serve in the military. I'm the first one who went to university and to study music instead of that. They were both very proud of me, but at the same time also like there was a discomfort there. So I did that and then moved to Wellington, where I've continued to have a range of careers from cybersecurity. I've worked in sort of membership organizations in business and marketing and now in conservation and government.
Awesome. That's good background. And also it's so funny that you've learned more about parenting because the way I exactly remember, and Q and I don't talk a lot about our past and things like that, but we've both been to therapy to talk about our childhoods and about our parents who we love so much. Like we absolutely love our parents. But, you know, the way I see it is as a someone becomes a parent, like you don't know how to parent, right? And I know a lot of mums will listen to this, and as I get older, of course, a lot of my clients are becoming mums, but like you can only do the best that you can do as a parent, and as you grow up and your kids become parents eventually, they're going to do the best that they can do, and we learn each generation how to be better. Like our parents definitely raised us in a way that probably wouldn't be acceptable now if you were to look at it without going into the details of that. But you know, they did the best that they could do at the time, and we will do the best if, you know, whenever, if whatever happens in the future, if we become parents and things like that. So something that I did notice too is my mum would always, oops, I shouldn't say who said, but my mum, she was pretty firm on us. Like, I played violin, I played piano. She would always say, oh, your brother is naturally better at violin, naturally this, always, you know, she'd always compare us. And that is something I just don't think parents should do. Like, you should not constantly be compared and like competing with a sibling. I just don't think it's good.
It took us years to get over that. Like, it's only been the last sort of, what, 5 or 6 years since we got out from that umbrella where we've actually, like, when people are like, oh, yeah, how are your sister? Like, I actually now really like my sister.
Yes!
And to be like, I'm proud of everything she's done. Back then, no, it was just always like, oh, yeah.
We're competing.
And Julie's doing this thing, Hugh's doing this thing, and constantly playing off. It's like, oh, they're so successful, blah, blah, blah. But they'd praise the other person, they wouldn't praise us. And so that level of competition, I think, is an awful thing to do to kids.
Yeah, I think it's unhealthy. And like, even the newspapers back where we grew up in Blenheim, they'd be like, oh, Hugh got this award, then I get the award. And it was just always comparing us. We do violin competitions, music competitions, and we both do well. Like, we were in different classes. We never competed against each other in classes. But if I won a class or Hugh won a class, it's like, oh, who got how many first? And it's just not healthy to compare. And I also think that's the same in any relationship. Like, if you're in a relationship, you know, a romantic relationship, like, you don't want to be comparing yourself to one another. Like, if they win, you win. Like, if Hugh wins, I win. If I win, he wins. If Ross wins, we both win. Like, I think that it is really you versus you, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's siblings or
friends, anything. It's like, you celebrate. Why would you not want the people in the life in your life that you love to be winning? Like, and then they bring you up.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The whole thing is, like, my group of friends, if one of them wins, I'm right there cheering for them, and I know they are there for me as well.
Me too, and that's why, like, I am so careful with the people I surround myself with, because I know that when we share our wins, it's not bragging. It's like, hey, I did this. And you're proud of one another. Yep. Like, my friend recently got a new car, and I'm so proud of her and so excited for her. And then when I tell her good news, we celebrate together. So, yeah, I want to be surrounded by people that want to celebrate my wins, because I'm going to double down and be their hype girl too. So, yes, I love that you mentioned our childhood and how we were compared. Following on from that, how have you used your past experiences? So that's kind of the childhood reminded me of this question. How have you used your past experiences, good and bad, to shape who you are today?
It's a good question. So one of the things I do every year is I'm part of the Aspiring Leaders Forum on Faith and Values, which is a national leadership forum that goes to Parliament and does volunteer work. It's 4 or 5 days in a year, and I've been there every year for about a third of my life now, which is a crazy amount of time to dedicate to mentoring young people. What I've realized is everyone will go through really tough and difficult times, regardless of who they are. And that is scaled depending on the individual. No one's trauma is more or less important to anyone else. It's just you've been through some stuff, and that's equally as important as anyone else's. But what I've learned is there's two sorts of way you can approach it. One, you can say, I'm a victim. This thing happened to me, and I hate my life, and everything sucks, and I give up. The world is just unfair. Or the people who I find myself most drawn to are the ones who've been through that and then say, look, it wasn't my fault that this bad thing happened, but it is my responsibility to deal with it and then take that experience to either make my life better and learn from it, or more importantly, use that to help guide other people so they can heal themselves and then go on to help their communities. So the way I've used my experiences, good and bad, is almost as a reference point to help other people through really tough journeys. And I'm very privileged and happy that I get to work with Aspiring Leaders. Because I think I've had, in those years, I've had about 100 and something young people that I've mentored and worked with. Some of them were in very dark spaces with parental relationships. I'm still in touch with a couple of them now who, over the years, have come out and said, look, I wouldn't be around anymore if we hadn't had that conversation together. Mm. I'm like, those are, I've lost a couple of people too, who, for whatever reason, chose not to continue living, and they're the ones that stick most with me in my heart. But I try and hang on to the ones who we have helped heal. They're going on and doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And some of them, the amazing thing might just be they're raising a family and living happily. And I'm like,
just, that's so huge.
It's like, it's so huge. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm just living a family. I'm just doing this. I'm like, there's no just about it. That's an incredible thing. You're happy and you're still here. And I'm so proud of you. And I'm glad that you're still with us.
Yeah, I feel like we should put a trigger warning in before that. But yeah, for anyone that is struggling, of course, you should always reach out to get some help. And both Hugh and I have been to therapy and have found it very helpful. So please never feel like you can't reach out for help, whether it's to a loved one or a helpline or a therapist.
Absolutely. Everyone, if you reach out to the right people, everyone wants to help. That's just the human condition, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned the Aspiring Leaders Forum, and I know you speak a lot on TV. You've been on TV a lot in the past year. TV, radio interviews, awesome events where you get to help people and speak with a lot of new people. So I'd love to get any kind of advice you have for people that, you know, are a little bit afraid to speak publicly, whether it's for interviews they have on podcasts or, you know, presenting at work even. Any tips you have for that?
Yeah, so an interesting thing I learned recently is that public speaking is the number one biggest fear of people, and that rates around the same level as dying. So people would rather have a near-death experience than be asked to give a presentation in public, which to me is kind of crazy because I am typically more introverted, but because of the roles I've found myself slotting into where I want to help communities and represent, that by nature comes with a public speaking element. The things that I can give that are general pieces of advice are don't overthink your presentation. So if you're giving a slide deck, don't have notes that you're trying to remember or anything else. Put up general points and know your material so fluently and be confident in what you're talking about that you could have a conversation with a person at a bar and give the same presentation. So when I'm talking to like national media, I don't think, oh my God, I need to hit this point and this point and this point. I answer their questions based on the information that is stored in my brain because I'm an expert in the subject. If I'm not an expert in a subject, I won't be drawn into those questions. Like, look, this is not my area of expertise. However, I can contact XYZ person and have them get back to you on this. So the number one way to get confident in something is to be an expert in the issue that you're talking about and be really fluent with it. There are a whole bunch of things around breathing exercises as well. Making sure that before I go, I think of it as being on stage versus off stage, and that might have been my early music training. Mm. But the three deep breaths before answering questions, and taking your time to just put yourself in the right mindset. And you can do that in a number of ways. I like listening to people being interviewed that I respect or that I want to emulate. Funnily enough, it works for dates as well. If you want to go into a date feeling more happy and flirty, then you can listen to podcasts of people flirting and things like that on TV talk shows. That primes your brain and tricks you into being sort of funny, lighter, and more ready for things. So your brain is sort of switched on and warmed up. It's like doing a warm-up stretch at the gym. You can warm your brain up by listening to other people doing what you're about to do.
Cool.
Pro tip for for public speaking as well as
dating.
As well as dating.
Yeah. I think for me, like with competing, obviously, I think both of us have experience in being on stage from violin and piano and I guess even speeches at school. Like I used to love doing those. I think visualization for me is really important. So if you're, you know, wanting to go on stage for something like a bikini competition, which of course Hugh loves to do bikini comps.
I look great in a bikini.
I bet. Is to just visualize how it's going to go. And I visualize it being the best case scenario of walking up there, being confident, imagining how I feel when I step on that stage. So if you had a presentation, you'd visualize yourself, you know, walking up there, presenting with the slideshow, whatever it is, and seeing the best case scenario of everyone loving it.
Disclaimer, don't imagine me in a bikini or visualize me in a bikini as you're about to do your presentation, because neither of us wants that in their mind. But a key thing you mentioned is actually having a routine. Before you do anything that you do regularly, it's like, I know for various competitions in jiu-jitsu, I have one song that I put on play. It's on repeat in my headphones right until the ref says step on the mat. It's playing so I know that this is different from training. It gears my mind to like, okay, this is the game we're playing. Sometimes when I was doing like sporting class, like shooting competitions, I knew that every time I was there, I'd step into the box for my turn. I'd step left foot forward, look down, look up at them. Like, I had a very clear routine of this is business as usual. This is what I'm here to do, and I'm focused.
Yeah.
Do the same thing for presentations. I know when I go to step on stage for a presentation, left foot forward. And that routine is throughout my entire life, I have sequences I run through, and that gets my brain prepared to go to work.
Yeah, awesome. I guess I automatically have that routine. Like, you practice your posing. I know exactly what I want to achieve when I step on that stage. I have music that I've played during my practice that I play before stepping on stage. It gets my mind, like, into it. I even like to have an alter ego of, like, this is who I am. I'm going on stage, and that's what I have in my mind when I'm practicing. I think alter ego can be good.
Yeah, and it works for everything. It doesn't even have to be a big thing like public speaking. If you're going into a gym session and you want to make sure that you're focused and getting the most out of it and you're feeling tired, it's like, yeah, you know what? I am this person right now. I know what I need to do. These are my lifts. I have a plan. I'm going to execute the plan.
Awesome. Okay, moving on to a whole different topic, away from you in a bikini. Way you grew up, do you think that you turned into the man you thought you would?
Yeah, an interesting one, because so one of the things I do in my part time, and it's on the internet somewhere, is I do poetry. And one of my favorite lines that I've written was that I'm half the man I should be and could be, but I feel more closely aligned to the man than I've ever been. And so I think I have high expectations of myself and always have. So when you ask, am I the man I want to be? I'm like, not yet, but I'm getting there, is my constant answer. And it's like, it's always, I can appreciate where I am and enjoy my journey, but the man I'm going to be is the man in 5 years, 10 years from now. He's way cooler. Like, get in now, because this is like early investment stage. Like, 40-year-old me is going to be killing it. 50-year-old me, even better. 65-year-old me will probably still look like he's 30.
Yeah, that's genetics.
These genetics means I don't age.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't think, I think I'm close to it. Over the last 3 to 5 years, I've definitely grown, leaving my 20s was a big stage for me, as it is for most people, where you feel like, you can feel confident that, like, actually you've got your life pretty much together. And feel confident about what you're doing a lot of the time. And even if you don't, you still have time, but you at least know who you are at that point.
Yeah, I think me, obviously, shortly leaving a certain age bracket, I've definitely reflected on a lot of different things coming up. And I am safe to say that, like, where I am right now, I feel really content. Of course, I'm excited for the future. I'm looking forward to, you know, growing as a person and growing Fit with Andrea and all of that. But, like, I think it's so important to be grateful for where you are, and that it's not a bad thing to want more from your life or to want to be in a different place, as long as you're grateful for where you are right now and you're taking the actions to take you closer to your goal. Because I think a lot of people are in a place where they might complain about where they are, but they're not doing anything to change it.
Yeah. The other one is also, one of the common things is, if you talk to 15-year-old you, would they be proud of where you are? I'm like, 15-year-old me was absolutely deluded. Like, he's like, oh, I'm going to have $1 million by 30. I'm going to be retired. I'm going to be, like, married. I'm going to drive the Bugatti, whatever it is. I didn't care about cars, but that's a common example. And actually now, if I talk to him, I'm like, my goals since then have changed, but I'm so happy with life right now and so content. And all it comes down to is I've got great friends, good relationships with my family, a sport I love, and a job that I really enjoy that makes the country better. I'm like,
yeah.
When you have that, I'm like, well, life's pretty damn healthy. Good. And I'm healthy, like, two legs, two arms.
Pretty good.
Pretty, life's good.
Yes, that's good to hear. Awesome. So just a few more fun ones, because usually the podcast episodes are shorter, but I love this one. It's been so great chatting. I thought we would go through a few different kind of fun questions.
Quick fire ones?
Yeah, quick fire ones. So random kind of fun ones that came through. What do you think has become so expensive that it is not worth it anymore?
What's something that's become so expensive that it's not worth it?
Isn't that interesting? I thought I'd just put us on the spot for this. To be honest, while Hugh is thinking about this, I have noticed in New Zealand, boy oh boy, are some of the most random things super expensive. Like, the other day in the supermarket, mangoes were $10. So that's a really random one for you.
Interest rates.
Oh!
Yeah. Interest rates right now. If you're looking to buy a house, this is not financial advice.
Yeah, not financial but advice.
As someone who had to refix their mortgage recently, yeah. Interest rates, way too expensive, not worth it.
Okay, awesome. That was a good one. This one, I don't know if we can answer necessarily because we're not parents, but what parenting trend do you dislike? So I don't really know any parenting trends, but why don't we make it something that, aside from comparing your things, what's something you would not recommend? What's something you would not do for your child if the time comes?
I think a thing that I would avoid is trying to be my child's best friend. I think there's a difference between being a parent that's tasked with growing them into a responsible and functioning adult versus trying to be their friend that's always approachable. And like, there's a role difference between being a child's friend and their guardian and caretaker. Obviously, I'm not a parent yet, but I think I'd avoid that because I always want them to trust me, but I want them to feel safe around me as well. Personally, I think I'd avoid trying to be their friend. I'd want to be their trusted parent.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I would avoid pushing them into things they don't want to do. I think it has a role in that, you know, you want your kid to be able to try different things, but we don't necessarily want to be forcing a kid into doing a whole lot of different things that they're just not interested in because, like, yeah, I think our parents pushed us into lots of things and I'm grateful that they did. And it all worked out fine, but I think I'd want to give them an opportunity to try different things that they're actually interested in.
Yeah, expose them to things, but don't force them to do it.
Yes. Also, I would definitely, though, get them swimming lessons because our parents got us swimming lessons, but then we moved houses and my parents took me out of swimming school and I just feel like I'm not a very good swimmer while Ross is like a pro swimmer compared to me. So I think swim safety is important too. Okay, awesome. The last question that I had is write down the ways you think you've grown, then the ways you've seen the other grow. Compare notes. Are the motivators and the drive similar or different? But we're going to simplify this. We're not going to be writing down anything. I just want to know from you, I guess, how do you think I've grown from, like, I guess, younger me? And do you think that our motivators and drivers are the similar or different?
Yeah, so I think the ways I've seen you change are you've stopped living necessarily for the approval of parents and you're starting to live for your own happiness and the happiness of the people that you have either within your community of fitness people or of your husband and that family. And you feel a lot more at peace and balanced in yourself as a result of it. I remember when we were sort of younger, there was a lot of wanting to win approval and the competing thing, which we've talked about, that was there. And I think that's, you've grown out of that now, which I'm really proud of you for.
Yes, spot on.
The motivations and drivers, I think you're still as motivated because it's that hard work thing we talked about. That's still a massive thing. Like, you work harder than I do. I can openly admit that.
Thanks.
But yeah, so that's consistent. That's what I've seen. You're a lot more peaceful and comfortable with yourself and living for your own well-being rather than other people's approval.
I would say that is right spot on because like now, like my parents might be like, don't get a dog, don't do this, don't do that. And it's like, I've gone on to do many things they said not to do. I love it.
Remember when you were going to be an accountant for one of the big four firms and you're like, I hate this, but that was the safe thing that every Asian kid wanted. It's like, yeah, grow up and be an accountant and be safe. And you're like, no, I'm going to go on to my own thing. I'm like, when you did that, I was terrified for her. I'm like, I'm really worried that my sister's made the wrong move. But I'm like, she's confident, she's her own person, and then it's worked out so well. So
yeah.
At the end of the day, you made the right call.
Exactly. Thank you. And funny quick backstory is I actually got approved through like an interview process to, you know, go up to this potential internship program at Ernst & Young. And I wasn't going to go. I did not want to go to it. And I get a call from my dad and he said, I've booked you a bus, you're going. And I went. And surprise, surprise, Hugh was there for the same internship, but a different level.
I was there for their consulting graduate program.
Yeah, and I was there for an internship. And it was so funny because I had no idea he was going to be there. And we both went to it. It wasn't my cup of tea. I did get the internship. Didn't really go to it because we went off to Thailand for my 21st birthday with my mum. And we had such a good time. To be honest, the last thing I wanted to do was go back and do accounting. But that was just a funny backstory. And now in terms of how I've seen Hugh grow, I think like us together have grown closer over the years as we realize that we're not in competition with one another. Our communication's far better. I think like you have over the years become better at reaching out for help when you need it. So, you know, getting the help that you needed through therapy and things like that. And I think that you've matured a lot and that you can talk about your feelings now. And I've also seen you go through some really bad relationships that I think you've handled amazingly. And the fact that you keep getting up every time life wants to kick you down is amazing. So your resilience is definitely there. And even if you say that, you know, I work harder than you, I think that we just work differently and we have different clocks and different timelines. Like I might wake up earlier, but you stay up later and get work done. So I think that both of us have done really well to be where we are and we should be proud of ourselves.
Yeah, I think so too.
So thank you so much, Hugh, for joining us on this podcast. Thank you for those of you that sent questions through and for tuning into this. If you have any other questions at all, feel free to send them through. I am going to share Hugh's Instagram links in the description. So make sure you, you know, share it on your story. Say hello if you are single and ready to mingle.
Oh, that's the, yeah.
Feel free to send my brother a message. I'm looking for a great sister-in-law.
I will say that I am less active on Instagram.
Oh, yes.
However, if anyone wants business advice, public speaking advice or photography or whatever else, like I'm generally pretty happy to just chat about life with anyone. Yep. If you're ever in Wellington and like want a coffee, we have plenty of that. I only drink tea though, so there's a red flag for you. Only drinks tea, doesn't run on caffeine at all.
Yeah, awesome. Yay, thank you so much. We'll catch you in the next one.
Cool. Thanks, team. Bye.